to continue the central themes of the story.
Tad turpinājot centrālās tēmas šajā stāstā.
As I said, there is a double response, you know, to the problem of human evil.
Tad tā ir kā dubult atbilde šim cilvēka grēka problēmai.
They may not appear to be related, immediately appear to be related.
Nu, izskatās, ka varbūt uzreiz viņas nav cieši saistītas.
But on the other hand, I think there is a connection between the two.
Bet es uzskatu, ka te ir kādas saistības starp šīm divām.
I'll just propose to you that in the biblical storyline, God is restraining, opposing evil in this world.
Es piedāvāju, ka Dievs, nu, it kā ir opozīcijā šim ļaunumam šajā pasaulē.
For a redemptive purpose.
Nu, tāda glābšanas nolūkos.
It may not be instantly clear to us.
Tas varbūt nav uzreiz mums skaidrs.
The human evil that has been let loose in the fall story.
Tad šis cilvēka ļaunums, kas ir atklāts tajā krišanas stāstā.
Is of such a nature.
Tad ka tam ir tāda daba.
That it will actually destroy the very existence of humanity itself.
Ka tas var iznīcināt cilvēks pašu par sevi.
Not only because if God let go, then we would vanish.
Ne tikai tāpēc, ka ja Dievs mūs atstātu savā vaļā, mēs vienkārši izgaistu.
Even if God sustains us in the present form and existence.
Pat ja Dievs mūs uztur esošajā eksistences stāvoklī.
Without putting the problem under restriction and restrainment.
Neliekot nekādus tātad ierobežojumus.
The whole thing would humanity would start to self-destruct.
Tad tomēr cilvēks pats sevi iznīcinā.
And so I believe this theme is connected with the other theme, which I called God's redemption.
Tātad šī tēma ir saistīta ar to otru, kur es sauc par, nu, tātad šo samierināšanu.
You're still asking, or we are still asking the question, why didn't God let humanity go?
Tad mēs joprojām uzstādām jautājumu, kāpēc Dievs neļāva cilvēcei vienkārši iet saucē.
In Genesis 3:14.
Trešajā nodaļā, tur 14. Pantā, pirmā mūsu.
God is depicted as promising.
Dievs apsola.
That someday the problem will be solved, it will be undone.
Ka kādu dienu šī problēma tiks atrisināta.
And the instigator of rebellion itself terminated.
Un tas šī sacelšanās, nu, iznīcinā, apslāpēt.
In other words, in verse 14 we read in Genesis 3, so the Lord said to the serpent.
Tātad Dievs, tas kungs, sacīja čūskai.
Because you have done this.
Tādēļ, ka tu to esi darījusi.
Cursed are you about all livestock and all other wild animals.
Tu esi nolādēt visu lopu un lauku zvēru vidu.
You will crawl on your belly and you will eat dust.
Uz savu vēderu tev būs līst un pīšļu sēst visas tavas mūžu
dienas. All are the days of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, go on.
There is, however, no specific reference to who the serpent ultimately is.
Protams, te nav tāda atsauca, kas patiesībā ir šī čūska.
But in verse 15 you read these words.
Bet 15. Pantā jūs lasat.
I will put enmity between you and the woman and between your offspring and hers.
Un es celšu ienaidu starp tevi un sievu, starp tavu dzimumu un sievas dzimumu.
He will crush your head.
Tas tev sadragās galvu.
And you will strike his heel.
Bet tu viņam iekodīsi papēdi.
So this is the immediate promise that is given.
Tātad tas ir tas apsolījums, kas ir
part of the curse towards the serpent.
Tātad daļa no lāsta, kas ir izteikta,
is that someday,
kad kādu dienu,
its head will be destroyed.
Šī galva tiks samīta.
Crushed, to use the specific word.
Tātad samīta.
Which of course means the death and termination of the serpent power, whatever it is.
Tātad, kas nozīmē nāvi un iznīcināšanu, tās čūskas iznīcināšanu.
So broadly speaking, I could ask the question, who is the seed?
Tātad, tagad ir jautājums, bet kas tad ir sēkla?
Now, I usually ask that question in a class where I can get an interactive response. I ask, you know, who is the seed promised in Genesis chapter 3:14?
Tad es parasti klasē uzdodu šo jautājumu, lai dabūtu arī kādu atbildi, kas tad ir tā sēkla, kas tur ir minēta šajā pantā.
And those who do not know me, they take the bite.
Un tie, kas man nepazīsta, tie it kā, nu,
they immediately tells me it's Jesus.
Tie uzreiz atbild, Jēzus.
And then I ask the question, how do you get death out of the text?
Un tad es uzreiz jautāju, kā tad jūs no šī teksta to dabūtāra?
How do you come to the conclusion that this is Jesus? How do you arrive at that?
Kā jūs nonākt pie šī secinājuma, ka tas ir Jēzus?
When I read the text, there is not a single word or any sentence, any indication that this is about Jesus Christ.
Kad es lasu šo tekstu, tur nav nekāda mazākā norādījuma, ka tur ir runa par
Jēzus. At that stage in the story, we of course haven't heard anything about Jesus.
Šajā stāstā vēl stāvoklī mēs neko par Jēzus
Certainly
Kristu neesam
dzirdējuši. Certainly there is no record of it.
Nav nekādu pierakstu par to.
So when you just look at the text and say, what does the text say?
Kad jūs skatāties uz šo tekstu, ko tad šis teksts saka?
The text in all its simplicity simply says this.
Un tas šis teksts visā savā vienkāršībā saka šo.
That someday,
ka kādu dienu,
out of the seed line of the woman,
tad sievas tās pēcnācēji,
or out of humanity,
jeb no cilvēkiem,
this serpent power is going to be destroyed.
Šī čūskas vara tiks iznīcināta.
Now, humanity will be severely wounded by that power.
Cilvēki tiks šīs varas ievainot.
But the serpent power itself will eventually be crushed through humanity.
Bet šīs čūskas vara caur cilvēku tiks beigās iznīcināta.
So the agency for which the serpent power is overcome is humanity.
Tātad šīs, teiksim, tā vara caur ko šī čūska ienāk šajā cilvēks.
Now given the antecedent or the preceding story we have just been looking at in Genesis.
Tad nu mēs esam tajā stāsta vietā, kur tas ir Mozes grāmatas
sākumā.
They
have just been exiled from paradise, that was very good.
Tad viņi tikko izdzīti no paradīzes, kas bija ļoti laba.
They have just ended up in this mess.
Viņi tagad ir šajā haosā.
And the serpent is the agency through which it has happened.
Un čūska ir tas vāra vai kad, nu,
caur ko
tas notiek.
What would you have understood if you had listened to this?
Kā jūs to saprastie, ka jūs to klausties?
If this is to go to have any meaning whatsoever, it must imply at least this.
Ja tam ir kāda vispār jēga nozīme, tad tam ir jāietver sakojuši.
That someday all the damage that has been done because of the serpent will be undone.
Ka kādu dienu tam nu tai postījumam kas caur čūsku ienests ir jābūt atdarītam.
Meaning that of course somehow paradise lost will be restored.
Tad kaut kādā veidā paradīze kas ir zaudēta tiks atkal atjaunot.
If this is not the logic of the text itself then of course the promise is meaningless.
Ja tas nav loģiski no šī teksta, tam apsolījumam nav jēgas.
What is the purpose of promising that someday this serpent power will be destroyed if the effect of the serpent power will not be undone?
Tad kāda ir jēga apsolīt, ka šī čūska tiks iznīcināta, ja tas kas ir noticis, netiks labots.
But however, the text of course gave us no indication of how, when or by whom.
Bet šis teksts nekādā veidā mums nedod informāciju, kas, kad, kādā veidā.
Only that God will empower humanity to resist this serpent.
Tikai tas, ka Dievs dos spēku, lai pretoto šim ļaunumam.
And someday the serpent will be done.
Un kādu dienu šī čūska tiks iznīcināta.
And the curse thus lifted.
Un tas lasts tiks noņemts.
Now, how do you come to the conclusion that this is a promise about Jesus Christ, although cryptically?
Nu, tad kā mēs nonākam pie šī secinājuma, ka Jēzus Kristus ir tur?
Now, when you read this text with anybody or you talk to anybody about this, I'm just asking it for that reason.
Nu, ja es to prasu tāpēc, ja mēs šo tekstu lasam ar kādu kopā.
It's important that you don't read anything into the text which is not in the text at this stage.
Ir ļoti svarīgi, lai jūs neielasat tekstā to, kas tur nav.
If you take the storyline approach, you go the back, the past, the past is the key to the present.
Tātad pagātne ir atslēga tagadnei.
You read the text in the light of what precedes.
Mēs lasam tekstu tā gaismā, kas seko.
Of course, then it's a promise about restoration and victory.
Jā, tur ir apsolījums par uzvaru, atjaunošanu.
And you have to look to the story that follows in order to get more explanation about how this may or may not happen.
Un mēs sekojam stāstā, kas ir pēc tam, lai uzzinātu, kā tas ir noticis vai nav noticis.
So in terms of reading the Bible, you read what you're reading in the light of what precedes, and in order to answer further the question, who, how, then you have to look to what follows.
Tātad, lasot Bībeles stāstu pēc kārtas, mums ir jāsako līdz šim stāstam, lai tad redzētu, kā, kas ir piepildījies.
So already from stage 2, you have the indication, clearly indication, that God is responding in a double fashion to the problem.
Tātad, sākot no šī otrā līmeņa, mēs varam izsekot, kā Dievs ir atbildējis, reaģējis problēmai.
And my proposal to you is that this is the key to understanding everything that follows in the story.
Un mans piedāvājums ir, ka tā ir tā atslēga izpratnei visam tam, kas seko pēc stāsta.
Now, I believe that the logic of the story is that when you come from here and you move all the way through, you will eventually realize when you come to the prophets.
Un loģika ir tāda, ka tad, kad jūs sākt no tā sākuma punktu, ne tālāk visus, kur pravīši, ko mēs darīsim rīt,
that this is pointing forward to the one,
tad tas viss norāda uz to vienu,
whom we know as Christ,
kur mēs zinām, kas ir
and
Kristus,
in the New Testament as Jesus.
Jaunā derība saka,
but that
Jēzus,
is still for the future.
Bet tas vēl ir nākotnē.
So if you want to argue that the seed of the woman in Genesis chapter 3, that what God has in mind there is,
tad, ja mēs gribam argumentēt, kas tā sēkla tur ir, ko Dievs apsola,
you need to be able to at least argue the way through the story somehow.
Tad mums ir jāspēj šo stāstu parādīt kaut kā.
Explain how this promise is being built, sharpened and enhanced or what would I call it? Now the word is missing. You just translate what I said.
Okay, jā, tad mums ir jābūt spējīgiem parādīt, kā šis apsolījums tad tiek pastiprināts, uzbūvēts līdz piepildās.
How this promise connects with the next, and how it expands and develops the picture.
Kā šis apsolījums ir saistīts ar nākošiem, kā tas attīstās un pieaug.
So, I believe that this is setting the pattern, but I need to say a little more about Genesis story, and then we'll leave it.
Man vēl ir kas jāsaka par šo radīšanas stāstu, tad mēs to atstāsim.
See, the theme of rebellion and the theme of promise is going to structure the rest of the story.
Tas daļa par to sacelšanos un par samierināšanu, tas ir tā struktūra.
Particularly the theme of rebellion is going to develop, should I say, the biblical theology of sin.
Tātad sacelšanās tēma ir tā, kas atklāja to grēku.
When you
problēmu.
Read in Genesis 3, it's not immediately clear what evil is.
Trešajā nodaļā uzreiz nemaz nav skaidrs, kas tas ļaunums īsti ir.
Why it works the way it does and what the effects are.
Kā tas īsti darbojās un kādi ir efekti.
It needs a developmental story, so to speak. It needs to develop.
Tam ir jāattīstās, tur ir stāsts, to jāstāst.
In other words, it will only be revealed over time.
Tas tik ar laiku tiks atklāts.
Now, why humans are dysfunctional the way they are after this event?
Kāpēc cilvēki tā funkcionē pēc šī notikuma?
It's not immediately obvious, nor is it immediately clear. It needs explanation.
Tas nav uzreiz skaidrs, tam vajag skaidrojumu.
So in order to understand it, we need to trace its history.
Tātad mums ir jāsako, jāpēt vēsturi.
On the other side, the promise story or the grace story,
no otras puses šī glābšana, jeb apsolījumu tēma,
it, expressed in this promise is not immediately clear.
Arī izteikt šajos apsolījumos nav uzreiz skaidrs.
It also needs to be revealed over time.
Arī tai ir ar laiku jāatklājās.
Because as a matter of fact it's a question of God's actions and actions does not take place in an instant.
Jo tur ir runa par darbību Dievu un tas neuzreiz notiek neuzreiz.
Now the Genesis story will immediately embark upon explaining the radical, should I say, consequences of evil.
Tad nu nav uzreiz viss ļaunuma konsekvences atklāts.
Chapter 4 will immediately introduce you to a murder story.
Nu tad uzreiz tālāk seko šī slepkavības stāsts.
Which is the launch pad for a radical development of a human culture that is evil.
Kas ir kā tāds pamats stāstam par cilvēku kultūru tālāk, kas ir ļauna.
The promise story already indicates there will be two seed lines.
Šis apsolījums rāda, kad ir šies divas sēklu līnijas, ja pēcnācēja līnijas.
Although it's cryptic, nevertheless you have the seed line of the serpent and the seed line of the woman.
Tas ir it kā šifrēts, ir sievas sēkla un čūskas sēkla.
It's not immediately clear exactly what is what.
Uzreiz jau nav skaidrs, kas ir kas.
But you don't need to read very far in the story until you realize you immediately see the profile of two seed lines.
Bet nemaz nav tik tālu jālas, lai jau būtu skaidrs, kā šīs līnijas, sēklu līnijas, pēcnācēja
līnijas attīstās. There will be two lines, those who follow the serpent and those who follow God.
Tad ir tā līnija, kas seko čūskai un tā, kas Dievam.
So you are immediately introduced to a world very, very compressed.
Tad ir pasauli, kas ir ļoti
the story of Cain, of course, will proceed.
Tad šī Kaina stāsts seko.
We know he killed his brother.
Tad noslepkavoja savu brāli.
And God encountered him.
Un Dievs tad tur viņu.
And there is no evidence that Cain repented or regretted what he had done.
Un tad, kad Dievs runāja, nav nekāda tomēr liecība, ka Kains to nožēlot vai.
He only regretted the consequences for himself.
Viņš tās seks, tas, kas priekš viņa bija, tās viņš tad nožēlo.
And we read in the story that he will eventually establish a city and a community and a culture.
Un tiek rādīts, kā viņš tad kultūru, pilsētu, sabiedrību attīstā.
Don't ask me whom he married.
Neprasiet man, ko viņš aprecē.
I mean, After all, we are not being told the full story about what happened after paradise.
Jo mums nav viss stāsts, kas notika pēc paradīzes.
Nor are we being told everything about the family of Adam and Eve or anything like that.
Tad priekš nav nebija atstāstīts viss stāsts par Ādamu, Ievu un
What we are immediately confronted with is the conflict between those two brothers.
Tad tas, kas mums tiek parādīts uzreiz, ir konflikts starp šiem diviem brāļiem.
It is ultimately a conflict about our relationship with God.
Un uzreiz tas ir arī konflikts attiecībās ar Dievu.
And it will be immediately clear what we're dealing with here.
Un mums uzreiz ir skaidrs, ar ko mums ir darīšana.
It's the moment in time when the human story divides into two seed lines.
Un tas ir tas brīdis, kad sadalās šais divās pēcnācēju līnijas.
We know Abel died, but he got another brother later.
Tad Abels gan mira, bet tur bija vēl brālis.
But the interest here is why did humanity go the way they did?
Jautājums ir, kāpēc cilvēks attīstījās tā, kā viņi to darīja.
And the story about the humanity that perished in the flood is the humanity of Cain.
Un tad stāsts par to cilvēces daļu, kas plūdos gāja bojā.
But
tā,
he got children,
Cain
got children, and they began to populate the world.
Tad Kainam ir bērni, viņi piepilda pasauli.
And in verse 23 to 26 you have a very good story.
Un tad
Lamech story. It is chapter 4, verse 23.
Tad no, 4. Nodaļa no 23. Panta.
Actually starts in 19, Lamech married two women.
Tad tur sāks jau iepriekš 19. Pantā, ka Lamechs ņēma divas sievas.
So I don't know if it was a grandchild or whatever, or Cain, or something like that.
Kam tās bija mazmeitas, nezinu.
But we read verse 23.
23. Pants.
Lamech said to his wives.
Lamech sacīja savām sievām.
Ada and Silla.
Ada un Cilva.
Listen to me.
Klausiet manu balsi.
Wives of Lamech, hear my words.
Lameka sievas, dzirdiet, ko es jums saku.
I have killed a man for wounding him.
Vīru es nokauju par savu ievainojumu.
A young man for injuring me.
Zēnu par savu vāti.
If Cain is avenged 7 times,
ja Kains tiek atriebts 7 kārt,
then Lamech will be Lamech 77 times.
Tad Lamechs 77 kārt.
Now, what you are introduced to here is a development of a development of a culture.
Tātad tas, ko mēs šeit redzam, ir kultūras attīstība.
That is apparently exceedingly aggressive.
Kas ir ar vien agresīvāk.
Revengeful.
Atriebības.
And violent.
Vardarbīgi.
Now actually this Lamech, he prides himself of this.
Lamechs lepojas ar to.
He is definitely competitive, aggressive and violent.
Viņš ir tātad vardarbīgs, agresīvs.
And his violence is his pride.
Un tā viņa vardarbība, tas ir viņa lepnums.
And he declares publicly.
Un viņš to atklāja publiski.
That the revenge of Cain is nothing compared to the revenge I'll take.
No, un tātad, ka tas, kā tur Kains tiek tikt atriebts, nav nekas salīdzinājumā ar to, kā viņš.
Anybody crossing my path, I'll send into eternity. Anybody crossing
jā,
my path.
Jā, tātad, jebkurš, kurš man nāks ceļā, tas būs pazudis.
Now, I mention this because it is the introduction.
Es to pieminu, jo tas ir ievads.
To a development that will lead to the flood story.
Kas noved pie plūdu stāsta.
We often say what a terrible God that could do a thing like that.
Mēs parasti sakam, kāds briesmīgs Dievs, kas kaut ko tādu var darīt.
But we need to understand the reason why God finally responded the way he did.
Bet mums ir jāsaprot, kāpēc beigās Dievs reaģēja tā, kā viņš to darīja.
Now the story about Lamech is not just an incident.
Šis stāsts par Lamechu nav tikai tāds viens gadījums.
When you keep reading on in the story, you will discover.
Kad jūs turpināt lasīt, jūs atklāsiet.
That this is the profile of the pre-flood generation.
Ka tas ir tāds kā pirms plūdu cilvēks.
Actually, we read a note before this saying that at that time man began to call on the name of the Lord.
Tātad mēs atrodam tur apgalvojumu, ka tā.
Yes, it's, I think, here, and it is, where do we find it here? Yes, it's the last verse in chapter 4, last sentence.
Jā, tātad pēdējais teikums 4. Nodaļā.
Setting the stage for another story, the set story.
Tātad kas ir kā seta šī stāsta turpinājums?
Now, without over-interpreting the text, I think I can suggest
kā mēs to tekstu tur tulkot, es varu piedāvāt,
that there are some people who are, some persons who are discovering the horror of this development.
Kuri pamanīja šī tās ļaunās attīstības
briesmas. And they begin to turn to God. In other words, there is a massive revival, and yes.
Nu, tātad tas ir kā tāds atmoda, garīga atmoda.
Now, the reason God gives for finally pulling, should I say, the emergency brake.
Tātad iemesls, kāpēc Dievs šīs avārijas bremzes nospied.
You read that in chapter 4 and 5, of course.
Tātad jūs, protams, to lasat 4. 5. Nodaļā.
And then in chapter 5.
Tātad 5. Nodaļā.
No, this is the seed. No, these are the two seed lines. The seed line of Cain is chapter 4. Seed line of the serpent is chapter 5.
Tātad čūskas tās sēklas attīstība 5. Nodaļā.
And then you get what I call the second curse upon the ground.
Un tad ir otrā tas, nu.
Yeah, the second curse.
Blāsts, jā, paldies.
Yeah, yes, probably true. That is chapter 6 to 8.
Tātad tas ir no 6. Līdz 8. Nodaļā.
Okay. Now, this is really telling the story about God's second action after the fall.
Tātad tas ir tāds tā kā otrā Dieva darbība pēc krišanas.
And it takes the form of a massive environmental disaster or catastrophe.
Kas ietver sevī tādu masīvu katastrofu.
We usually know it as under the term the flood.
Parasti tas viss ir zem termina plūdi.
And the reasons are given in chapter 6 verse 5.
Tad iemesls ir 6. Nodaļā 5. Pants.
The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on earth had become.
Kad Dievs redzēja, ka cilvēku ļaunums augt in aug zemes virsū,
and that every inclination of his thoughts and his hearts were only evil all the time.
Un viņu sirdsprāta tieksmes ikdienas vērsās uz ļaunu.
And of course he is here making a diagnosis there is something wrong with the human heart.
Tad diagnoze ir, kad kaut kas nav kārtībā ar cilvēka sirdi.
Well, I'll comment on that later on. In verse 11 to 13 you read.
Tad tālāk no 11. Panta mēs varam lasīt.
Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence.
Bet zeme bija samaitāta Dieva priekšā un pilna varas darba.
God saw how corrupt the earth has become, for all people of the earth had corrupted their ways.
Un skatīja Dievs to zemi un redz, tā bija samaitāta.
And he said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people.
Un tad Dievs sacīja, no ik viens radības gals nāk manā priekšā.
For the earth is filled with violence because of it.
Jo zeme ir pilna varas darbu, ko tie dara.
I want you to notice this. This is the second time it's being stated.
Tad šī ir, es gribu jūs ievērot, tā ir otrā reize, kad tas tiek teikts.
The world was filled with violence.
Kad zeme ir pārpildīta ar šo vardarbību.
And the paradigm is of course the Lamech story.
Un tas paradigma nāk no Lamech. Šī stāst.
Now this theme of violence beginning with Cain killing his brother,
tad sākot ar to, ka Kains nogalina brāli,
traced through his descendant Lamech,
tālāk caur šo Lamehu,
and apparently you know manifested on a worldwide scale just before the flood.
Kad tas tā jau atklājās pasaulē pirms plūdiem.
Of course sets the scene for this stage that we call the flood.
Tas it kā uzzīmē to ainu notikumam, ko mēs saucam plūdi.
Furthermore, it appears as if this sudden ascend of wickedness or rise of wickedness.
Jā, tad šis ļaunuma, ja viss vardarbības pieaugums
seems to be the result of the collapse of the God worshiping group of people.
Tad rezultāti šī, nu, sacelšanās pret Dievu.
It says the sons of men were the sons of God saw the beauty of the sons of the daughters of men and married as many of them as they pleased.
Tātad tur šis izteikums par to, ka tie Dieva dēli redzēja tās cilvēku meitas un precē.
So those who were following the way of God were shrinking fast.
Un tātad tas nozīmē, ka tie, kas sekoja Dievam, palika arvien mazāk.
It's a great apostasy we are looking at here.
Tātad liela atkrišana šeit.
So what God here is going to call the curse.
Tas, ko Dievs saka lāsts.
Let me see what I have here. Now, God actually now in the flood reduces life conditions for humanity.
Tātad tur ir ierobežos šīs, nu, tātad dzīves.
He calls it a curse on the ground.
Tātad zeme tiek nolādēta, dzīves tas labums tiek ierobežots.
And so on.
Un tā tālāk.
Now, I want you to notice that again.
Es gribu, lai jūs to atkal ievērojat.
In chapter 8,
8. Nodaļā,
where God Noah built an altar to the Lord after the flood,
kad tagad pēc jau plūdiem Noah uzceļ altāru.
And in verse 21, the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma,
un tur 21. Pantā, ka tas kungs soda patīkamo smāžu,
and said to his heart,
viņš sacīja savā sirdī,
never again will I curse the ground because of man.
Es turpmāk vairs nenolādēšu zemi
cilvēka dēļ,
jo cilvēka sirds tieksmes ir ļaunas no mazām dienām.
Now, so there is a promise he's not going to do this again, but he calls it curse. And I want you to be aware of that the curse in Genesis 3 is actually sharpened in chapter 6 to 8.
Tātad, nu, tur viņš apsola, ka tā vairs nenotiks, bet es vēlētos, lai jūs pamanat, ka tas slāsts, kas ir izteikts jau trešajā nodaļā, šeit ir vēl pastiprināts.
Astur. Life condition of this planet is being strongly reduced.
Tātad šie apstākļi virs zemes dzīvei ir...
Which of course means that the human capacity for evil will likewise be restrained.
Tātad dzīves apstākļi ir sliktāk, kas nozīmē, ka tas ļaunuma arī iespēja tiek samazināta.
Now I just labored that for a few moments because I believe here you have this setting.
Es to pieminēju tāpēc, ka nu te lai būtu tas kopā.
For understanding, should I say, the continued story.
Lai mēs redzētu, kā tas stāsts attīstās.
Now the human rebellion story will continue also in the book of Genesis.
Tātad šī sacelšanās stāsts turpinās visā pirmā mūsu grāmatā.
In the story of Canaan, the son of, what was it, Cam.
Jā, tātad Cam dēl līnija tālāk.
And later on the rebellion at Babel, when they built the tower.
Pie Bābeles torņa, kad cēla.
This time it wasn't the land that was being cursed, this time it was human society that was being cursed.
Tajā brīdī tā nav zeme, kas tiek nolādēta, bet cilvēku sabiedrība.
God split humanity by confusing their languages into all kinds of factions and nations and what have you.
Tātad Dievs sadalīja cilvēci, sajaucot šīs valodas dažādākos no...
Now their violence would primarily be exercised in terms of one group against another.
Tātad šī vardarbība tagad nu vairāk tiks tādās mazajās grupās
viena pret otru. So you could call that a social curse.
Tātad sociāls lasts.
But it's certainly, and the reason was, if they keep united,
jo tas ir iemesls ir, ja viņi paliktu vienoti.
There is no limit to what they can do.
Nav ierobežojumi tajā, ko viņi
so
var darīt.
So God decides one more time to reduce the potentials of humanity for evil.
Tad Dievs nolēm vēlreiz ierobežot to potenciālu ļaunumam.
I believe this is what Paul talked about in Romans chapter 1 verse 19 and onward.
Es ticu, ka tas ir tas, par ko Pāvils runā vēstulē romiešiem,
tur pirmā nodaļā. The wrath of God against evil has been revealed from the very beginning.
Ka šis Dieva ienaids pret to ļauno ir jau no paša sākuma atklāts.
It's revealed in the human story. In other words, God's aversion and resistance and rejection of evil, of course, is quite clearly revealed in the story.
Tātad Dieva tā pretestība ļaunajam ierobežošana, tas atklājās jau stāstā no paša sākuma.
So this is one of the revelations that is seen in the human story.
Tātad vēl viena tāda atklāsme, kas redzam šajā cilvēces
stāstā. But as we read in Genesis 8:21,
kad mēs lasam pirmā mostra no
God said to Noah, I'm not going to do this again.
Tātad, nu es nelasīšu to, ko tur Dievs saka Noā.
Although every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood.
Tātad, sirds ir ļaunas jau no mazām dienām.
Now the curse of course here again plain clearly means
tātad šis lasts šeit atkal ļoti skaidri rāda, jeb nozīmē,
that God's sustaining and interactive relationship with the physical world has changed.
Ka šī Dieva attiecības ar to fizisko pasauli atkal ir mainītas.
In other words, it has been subject to decay and difficulties.
Nu, šo grūtību dēļ.
And furthermore, chapter 6-8 gives us the first indication or description.
Un tad tālākās nodaļas mums parāda.
Which we call evil as a deep-seated universal radical problem.
Tad ļaunums, kas rada šīs dziļās universālās problēmas.
The nature which is rooted in the human heart.
Tas daba, kas tagad ir ielikta tajā cilvēka sirdī.
Now, evil is not just something we learn.
Ļaunums nav tikai tas, ko mēs tā iemācamies.
Not just a question of education.
Tas nav tikai izglītošanās jautājums.
There is something wrong with the human heart.
Kaut kas ir nepareizi ar cilvēka sirdi.
Now, I think this is the most radical definition of evil that the Bible will ever provide.
Tā ir pati radikālākā ļaunuma definīcija, ko
something has
Bībele
gone
atklāt.
Wrong in the human mind and the human heart, and this is the heart core source of the problem.
Tātad kaut kas ir noticis nepareizi ar cilvēku prātu, ar cilvēku sirdi.
We no longer have the kind of mind or heart that we were created to have.
Mums nav vairs tāds prāts, tāds šī sirds, kādu mēs tikām radīti.
The problem is universal, it is radical, and its nature has to do with the human mind.
Tātad problēma ir universāla, radikāla, kaut kas ir jādara cilvēku prātu.
It appears to be a state of mind that is inherited.
Tātad prāts ir tas, kas ir sabojāts.
Of course, in a world where all descent is through biological, procreation.
Tātad pasaulē, kur ar šo atjaunošanu var atrisināt.
Whatever this problem with the mind is, whatever the cause of it,
lai kas būtu tas, ko, ar ko to var panākt.
What Adam does no longer have, he cannot pass on.
Tas, kas Ādamam nebija, to viņš vairs nevar nodot tālāk.
In some way or another, we inherit this state of affair.
Arī mums ir tas pats stāvoklis tādā citādā veidā.
Now, the logic of the inheritance principle in creation,
tad radībā šis princips
would have been this,
ir sekojošs.
Or is.
Ir.
It simply means that if Adam had never sins,
ja Ādams nekad negrēkot,
we would have inherited a positive, result.
Tātad būtu mums arī tas pozitīvais rezultāts.
If he no longer has his positive possessions,
tātad ja nav šis pozitīvais,
we will inherit all the negatives.
Nodos, tad mums ir tikai negatīvais
pārējais. Now you may ask the question, is that fair?
Jūs, protams, varat jautāt, vai tas ir godīgi.
Of course it is not fair.
Protams, tas nav godīgi.
The Bible never argues that it is fair.
Bībele nekad neapgalvo, ka tas ir godīgi.
As a matter of fact, the Bible argues this is evil.
Bībele tieši pretēji saka, tas ir ļaunums, ļauni.
Actually, most of the Bible is saying that most of what happens in this world, God doesn't like it.
Bībele saka, lielākoties, kas notiek šai pasaulē, Dievam tas nepatīk.
God is dead set opposed to it. He does not enjoy it.
Dievs ir pret to, Dievs par to nepriecājās.
So we should be aware that it's meaningless, it is evil.
Mums tas ir jāsaprot, ka tam nav nekādas jēgas, tas ir ļauns.
Now, our biological heritage, if Adam had never sinned, would have been this.
Tātad, ja tas sekas, ja nekad nebūtu grēkots,
whatever physicality that existed before the core, the fall,
tātad viss tas, kas bija pirms grēkā krišanas,
without decay, defect or death,
bez nāves rezultātu,
that's what we would have inherited if he had been faithful.
Tad tas būtu tas, ko mēs piedzīvotu, ja mēs būtu palikuši uzticīgi.
Culturally, we would inherit a culture in which there were no evil, decay or any kind of that stuff.
Tad kultūra būtu bez ļaunās ietekmes, kas viss ir.
And relationally, we would have inherited fellowship with God rather than exile from God.
Tad attiecībās ar Dievu tās būtu tuvas, nevis šīs.
But Adam lost it, and what he does no longer possess, he cannot pass on.
Bet tas, ko Ādams ir zaudējis, nevar tikt nodots tālāk.
Now, I'm proposing to you that this hard problem, and we'll come back to it,
Tad šī sirds problēma, mēs pie tā vēl atgriezīsimies,
has something to do with the lost interaction with God.
Ka tas ir saistīts, kaut kā saistīts ar attiecībām ar Dievu.
Just to preempt here, let me suggest to you as a model.
Ļaujiet man piedāvāt to jums kā modeli.
Now, you all know the difference between hardware and software, don't you?
Jūs taču visi zināt atšķirības starp programmatūru un dzelžiem.
It's not really that analogy I would use, I would rather use the analogy of a lamp.
Es labāk izmantoju to salīdzinājumu.
A lamp is formed and created with the capacity to shine or give light.
Tātad lampa ir izveidota ar potenciālu spīdēt.
But it only functions that way when electricity soars through it.
Bet tas notiek tikai tad, kad elektrība plūst cauri.
I believe, and I haven't given you the sustaining evidence now,
nevar jums tagad pierādīt.
Humanity or humans, we are like the lamb created to have an image-bearing capacity.
Bet mēs kā cilvēki esam radīti ar to potenciālu, nu būt kā tai lampai spīdēt.
We are created with an image bearing capacity to reflect the image of God.
Mēs esam radīti ar to potenciālu par atklāt Dieva līdzību.
But we only function that way when we are connected with the Spirit of God.
Bet mēs varam to realizēt tikai tad, ja esam savienoti ar Svēto
Garu. So if that interactive connection with the Spirit of God is absent.
Un tajā gadījumā, ja šis kontakts ar Svēto Garu nav.
The kind of mind that you read about in Genesis chapter 4 to 11.
Tad tas kaina prāta stāvoklis, par kur jūs lasat 4. Nodaļā.
Competitive, aggressive and violent.
Vardarbīgs.
Is simply the way the human mind functions when it's not connected with the Spirit of God anymore.
Tad tas ir tas, kā cilvēka prāts darbojas, ja viņš nav savienots ar Dievu.
Now, the evidence for that assertion you have to find in the story that follows.
Pierādījums tam jums ir jāatrod šajā visā stāstā, kas seko.
Especially the New Testament will make it very clear to you that this is the way it is.
It sevišķi jaunā derība atklāja, ka tas ir veids, kā tas ir.
We were created to have an interactive relationship with the Spirit of God.
Mēs esam radīti, lai mums būtu šīs attiecības ar caur Svēto Garu.
When that is gone, this is what you see.
Bet kad tas ir nav, tad, nu, paliek tas, ko jūs redzat.
So, I think the Genesis story is really setting the industrial standard or the benchmark for much of what is going to follow.
Tātad šis radīšanas stāsts, tur šis pirmās mūsu grāmatas sākums parāda to robežu akmeni, kā tas darbojas.
And it also already sets the pattern, which I call the storyline.
Tātad tas ir tas, ko es saucu par šī stāsta līniju.
Moving in stages.
Kas iet caur šiem līmeņiem.
So, God's wrath or judgment or whatever you want to call it
Dieva dusmas jeb tiesa jeb kā jūs to gribat
saukt is in Genesis presented as one of God's responses to evil
tas tiek atklāts pirmā Mozes grāmatā kā Dieva atbildi ļaunumam
but the other side of the story that is the promise story is also developed
tātad bet ir arī otra tā apsolījuma daļa kas tiek attīstīta
beginning with the promise regarding the serpent power that and that he will be undone
sākot ar to kad apsolījums par to ka šīs čūskas darītais tiks
the whole story of promise and curse in Genesis 3 is the immediate setting for the Noah story
tātad arī tur šie apsolījumi un lāsti tālāks Noah stāstā
the promise not to curse the world again this way is clearly a reference back to the original one
tātad apsolījums neiznīcināt vairāk šo pasauli tas ir atsauc uz iepriekšējo.
And the command to multiply and fill the earth again is a repetition of the creation command.
Kā arī novēlējums vairoties piepildīt zemi ir atsauc uz iepriekšējo.
What I'm trying to say is this, that if you want to understand what follows,
tas, ko es gribu teikt, lai saprastu to, kas seko,
you need to look at it in terms of the preceding story.
Jums ir jāpaskatās atpakaļ no sākotnējiem stāstiem.
On the one side, while curse refers to God's restraining activities towards evil,
tātad no vienas puses šie lāsti nostāja pret ļaunumu,
blessing normally will refer to God's restorative activity in restoring things.
Un tātad svētība, tas ir tajā Dieva uzceļu atjaunošana, atjaunošajā centienos.
And God clearly adds a promise to Noah.
Un tad Dievs dod apsolījumu Noah.
It says that Noah, God blessed Noah and his sons.
Teikts, ka Dievs svētī Noah viņa dēls.
And repeated the promise or the command that they should fill the earth.
Atkārtoja šo padomu, jeb norīkojumu piepildīt zemi.
Go out and fulfill the cultural mandate that God has given from the beginning.
Ejiet un piepildiet to uzdevumu, šo kultūrālo
uzdevumu. Clearly indicating that God wants humanity to survive.
Skaidri norāda, ka Dievs grib, lai cilvēks saglabātos.
He wants humanity ultimately to fulfill its original purpose.
Dievs vēlās, lai šis sākotnējā iecer cilvēks ir
īstenot. And he eventually states it all in terms of a covenant.
Un tas tiek šajās līguma vārdos.
You read that in chapter 9, verse 8.
Tad 9. Nodaļa, 8. Pants.
I will establish a covenant with you and with your descendants after you.
Redz, es tagad ceļu savu derību ar jums un ar jūsu pēcnācējiem pēc
and
jums.
And goes on in verse 12, God said, this is a sign of the covenant I'm making between me and you.
Un tālāk, 12. Pantā, šī ir mana derības zīme, ko es celšu tev un jums.
And he's repeating it several times, this covenant, which of course the sign is the so-called, what do you call it?
Un tātad tas iet vairākas reizes tiek atkārtots.
Rainbow,
šis derības,
yes, of course.
Varavīks, kā
symbols. And that is going to be an everlasting covenant.
Un tātad mūžīga derība līgums.
In other words, God says that I will stay to my promise.
Dievs saka, es palikšu pie sava apsolījuma.
And it only makes sense in the light of the preceding story.
Un tas ir tikai tam ir jēga tālāks.
Where God promised that someday evil will be overcome.
Ka no tā iepriekšējā apsolījuma, ka kādu dienu ļaunums tiks uzvarēts.
Sometime the serpent will be crushed.
Ka kādu dienu čūska tiks samīta.
And someday paradise will return.
Un kādu dienu paradīze atgriezīsies.
To promise that he will sustain this world as an everlasting promise can imply only one thing.
Apsolījums, ka šī pasaule tiks uzturēt, paturēt.
That God means business when he said in Genesis 3, I will undo it.
Kad tas ir nu, šis Dieva apsolījums, kas tik dots trešajā nodaļā, kad reiz es to atkal atjaunošu.
And our course subsequent to the story about Babel.
Un tātad tās konsekvences šim stāstam par
Bābeli. We now have the generations of the nations listed.
Ka mums ir šīs te, lūk, tautu visi saraksti uzskaitīt.
And one of those that are rising out of the seed line or promise.
Un šī viena, kas ir no šīs apsolītās pēcnācējas
sēklas.
Nu, tātad Abrahāma
and that's
stāsts.
Where we are now in chapter 12 and onwards.
Tad mēs esam 12. Nodaļā un tālāk.
Now we are now seeing the story moving from the general world picture in just 11 chapters.
Tātad šie 11 nodaļas no tādu kopējā sainas.
To Abraham, which is a story in which God will now do business, so to speak, with the family of Abraham.
Mēs tagad pārslēdzamies uz to, kur Dievs darīs kā darījumu ar vienu ģimeni Abrahāma.
And I want you to notice right away the promise to Abraham.
Un es gribu, lai jūs tagad uzreiz ievērojat šo apsolījumu Abrahāmam.
Everything said so far is just a preamble to the Abraham story.
Tātad viss tas, kas bija pirms tam, ir tā, tāds ievads stāstam par Abrahāmu.
It says here in those three verses, the Lord had said to Abraham, leave your country, your people, your father's household and go to the land I'll show you.
Tātad 12. Nodaļa, un tas kungs sacīja uz Abrahāmu, izej no savas zemes, no savas cilts un no sava tēva nāma uz zemi.
I'll make you into a great nation, I'll bless you, I'll make your name great, and you will be a blessing.
Kur es tev rādīšu, un es tevi darīšu par lielu tautu, es tevi svētīšu un darīšu lielu tavu vārdu, un tu būsi par svētību.
I'll bless those who bless you, and I'll curse those who curse you.
Es svētīšu tos, kas tevi svētī, un nolādēšu tos, kas tevi nolāda.
All the nations, all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you.
Un tevī būs svētīts visas zemes cilts.
Now, if you want to understand this blessing cursing language, how would you go about it? Where would you look?
Ja jūs gribat tagad saprast šo svētību un lāstu valodu, nu, kā jūs to sapratīsiet, kur jūs skatīsieties?
Now remember, if you have been Abraham and you have experienced God speaking to you like this.
Ja jūs esat Abrahāms un tagad piedzīvojat, ka Dievs šādi ar jums runā.
The only story you know is the preceding story.
Tad vienīgais stāsts, ko jūs zinat, ir stāsts, kas ir pirms tam.
What do you think you would have understood by curses here?
Tātad, kas ir tas, ko jūs šeit varētu saprast ar lāstu?
Well, you have a whole catalog of what it means sitting behind you in the past story. If you are in any doubt about the curses of God is about, you just read.
Tātad, mums tagad ir viss šie te saraksti par viss, ar visiem tiem lāstiem, nu kā Dievs to ir domājis.
More important, however, how would you understand the word blessing if you have been Abraham?
Bet daudz svarīgāk ir, ja jūs būtu Abrahāms, kā jūs saprastu vārdu svētīt.
Or how do you explain it to others when you come to a text like this? In your seed all the peoples of the earth will be blessed.
Kā jūs varat izskaidrot citiem, ko tas nozīmē,
you know
ka tevī
blessing is that Abraham is being told here?
Tātad, kas tā ir par svētību, kas Abrahāmam par
How would you explain it?
Kā tu jūs varat izskaidrot?
You only have the preceding 11 chapters to help you to understand.
Jums ir tikai 11 nodaļas pirms tam, lai to saprastu.
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you here. Your reading of the Bible, the past is the key to what follows. Wherever you read.
Tas, ko es jums gribu pateikt, ir, kad tas, ko jūs esat izlasījuši līdz tam, ir tā atslēga, lai saprastu, ko jūs tagad lasat.
If you're reading the Gospel of John,
ja jūs lasat Jāņa evaņģēlijā,
it's the pre-story before the Gospel of John that is the key to understanding what he's talking about.
Šī ir tā atslēga, lai saprastu par to, ko Jānis runā savā evaņģēlijā.
If you read in the story of David or Isaiah,
ja jūs lasat stāstu par Dāvidu jeb Jesai,
it's the pre-story that's the key to understanding what they're talking about.
Tātad stāsts, kas ir noticis pirms tam, ir atslēga sapratnē, kas notiek.
Because they are discussing and contributing to the story that went before them.
Tātad tas, jo tiek pārunāts un pievienots tam, kas jau ir teikts pirms
and
tam.
And the same is the case in Genesis. If you want to understand what the promise to Abraham is all about, please consult the pre-story.
Un šeit ir tas pats, ja jūs gribat saprast to, kas ir Abrahāmam teikts, konsultēties ar to, kas ir bijis pirms
tam. We usually jump forward and ask the question, what did the New Testament say about it?
Mēs parasti pārlecam uz priekšu un sakam, bet ko jaunā derība saka par šo?
And don't be surprised if the people you talk to and try to read the text with,
un nest pārsteigt, ja cilvēki, ar kuriem jūs runājat un gribat lasīt šo tekstu,
don't understand your way of reading.
Nesaprot jūs lasīšanas
veidu. Because they say, where do you get that from?
Jo viņi tad saka, no kurienes jūs to dabujāt?
Look over your shoulders.
Tad skatāties, ko jūs esat
parādījis. I call it antecedent context. Constantly look over your shoulder. What was before you?
Tad es to saucu kā skatīšanos pārpa plecu, kas jums tur bija pirms tam.
He said, I'll make you into a great nation.
Viņš saka, es tev darīšu par lielu tautu.
Now you understand what a nation is in terms of the pre-story.
Tad jūs saprot, kas ir tauta tajā iepriekšējā stāstā.
Not what you think a nation is today, but the nation at that time.
Tad nevis tas, ko jūs ar tautu saprotat tagad, bet tas, ko
And
tu saprot tajā laikā.
I'll bless you, he says.
Un Dievs saka, es tevi svētīšu.
And I'll make you into a great, I'll make your name great, I'll make you a blessing.
Es tevi darīšu par svētību.
What could it all mean? I'll bless those who bless you.
Ko tas var nozīmēt? Es svētīšu tos, kas svētī tevi.
And all the people of the earth will be blessed through you.
Un visi cilvēki caur tevi tiks svētīti.
Now, this is the first time since the creation story.
Tātad tas ir pirmais gadījums kopš radīšanas.
You have such a repeated use of the word blessing.
Kad tiek atkārtots atkal un atkal vārds svētīt.
Now, God intends to bless. He intends to make Abraham's family a blessing.
Dievs grib padarīt Abrahāmu ģimeni par svētību.
He wants to pass the blessing through them.
Dievs grib svētību caur viņiem nodot.
So ultimately the whole world would be blessed through his family.
Lai galā visa pasaule caur viņu būtu svētīta.
So the key word here is of course blessing.
Tad atslēga vārds, protams, ir svētīt.
In other words, it's an expression of something that God wants to do for the world.
Tas ir izteiksmes veids tam, ko Dievs grib darīt pasaulē.
Through the family of Abraham.
Abraham ģimeni.
In other words, Israel is now the divine agent of God's blessing.
Tad Izraels ir tas Dieva svētību aģents šeit.
Whatever good intention God have for this world, they're going to come through the family of Abraham.
Viss labais, ko Dievs darīs, tas nāks caur šo Abraham ģimeni.
Now we know that.
Tagad mēs to zinām.
So that raises the question again, what does blessing mean?
Tas atkal izraisa šo jautājumu, ko tad šī svētība nozīmē?
I think the connection with the previous story is so clear.
Šis kontakts ar iepriekšējiem stāstiem ir skaidrs.
Blessing as we know it now,
svētība, kā mēs to tagad zinām,
is referring to the good order that God established in the beginning in paradise.
Tas atsaucās uz to labo kārtību, kādu Dievs to bija iekārtojis paradīzē.
This is what God has in mind for us.
Tas ir tas, kas Dievam ir prātā.
And he's promising Abraham that through his seed line this promise will be realized.
Kad Dievs apsola Abrahamam, ka caur viņa pēcnācējiem tas tiks realizēts.
The family of Abraham is going to be the family or the nation or the people through which paradise will be restored.
Ka Abrahāms, viņa pēcnācēji, viņa tauta būs tie, caur kuriem šī paradīze tiks atjaunot.
This is the only reading I can get out of this text.
Tas ir vienīgais, ko es no šī teksta varu izlasīt.
This is a massive promise.
Tas ir liels, masīvs apsolījums.
It's significant beyond our comprehension.
Tas ir pat pāri mūsu saprašanai.
We are now being told more specifically what the goal of God's blessing is.
Kad mums tiek pateikts, kāds ir mērķis Dieva svētībām.
That the crossing of the serpent implies the restoration of paradise.
Ka šī čūskas samīšana ir paradīzes atjaunošana.
And the agent,
un tad šis aģents ir,
and the agent of this blessing is none other than Israel.
Un kad tas, kas to darīs, realizēs, jeb aģents, kas dar, ir neviens cits kā Izraels.
Agent and goal.
Tad
let's put that up like this.
Aģents un mērķis.
And let me take another color, just for the fun of it. Don't translate that. Humanity.
Tad cilvēce.
See, the promise given originally in Genesis 3, basically talks about humanity in general. The servant will be overcome through the agency of humanity.
Tātad tur trešajā nodaļā tiek runāts lielajās terminos par visu cilvēci.
And the goal seems to be victory.
Un uzvara izskatās kā, tātad tas mērķis ir uzvara par ļauno.
Now the focus on the agent shrinks to the nation of Israel.
Tagad sašaurinās šis apsolījums, jeb tas tas uz Izraēlu.
And the goal is explained now very clearly. Blessing, which we now understand, is so you have this narrowing down here in the explanation of
un
the story.
Mērķis ir svētības, un tātad it kā sašaurinās šis redzējums.
So far, we basically know who the agent is, and we know what the goal of the story is.
Tātad mēs zinām, kas ir tas, kam tiek apsolīts, ir tas aģents, un mēs zinām to mērķi.
And you haven't even started to read beyond the 12th chapter of Genesis.
Un nu mēs neesam nekur tālāk tikuši kā 12. Nodaļa.
You shouldn't be surprised that this is going to be one of the key books for the New Testament.
Jūs nebūsiet pārsteigti, ka šī ir viena no tām pamat kā grāmata jaunai derībai, lai saprastu.
From now on, should I say the story is the story about the agent.
Tālāk tātad ir stāsts par to, nu, kas to saņem
aģenta,
caur kuru šī paradīze tiks atjaunot.
So, this is quite a story.
Tā varens stāsts.
The rest of Genesis, of course, is about what happens to the family of Abraham, their sojourn in Egypt, etc.
Tātad tur pārējais pirmā mūsu grāmatā stāsts par Abraham ģimeni, par uz Ēģipti ceļojumu.
The promise line is now that of Isaac and Jacob.
Tālāk šī apsolījuma līnija ar Izaku, Jēkabu.
That's why God now begin to call himself the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob.
Tāpēc tas ir tāpēc, ar Dievs sāk saukt sevi par Abrahāmu, Izaku, Jēkabu Dievu.
We are now dealing with a people of destiny, a God-given destiny.
Mēs runājam par cilvēkiem, kuriem Dievs ir devis kādu, nu, uzdevumu.
So the subsequent story is simply about how is God through that agency ever going to deliver on that promise?
Tātad tas jautājums ir par to, kā Dievs caur šo šiem aģentiem tātad realizēs to, ko viņš apsolījis.
If we understand it so far, I would be excitingly interested in what story is going to follow.
Tātad tik tālāk, ka mēs esam sapratuši, tas ir aizraujoši redzēt, kas tur sekos tālāk.
I want to remind you that the Exodus story from Egypt.
Tātad tālāk šis iziešanas stāsts no Ēģiptes.
We know they were slaves and all of that. We don't need to go into this here.
Mēs zinām, ka viņi bija vergi un kā tas, nu, to iziešanas.
It's actually the beginning of the fulfillment of the promise to Abraham.
Tātad tas būtībā ir apsolījuma Abrahāmam piepildījums.
That is where the fulfillment of the promise I'll make you into a great nation is taking shape.
Kur šis apsolījums darīt par lielu tautu, tad nu iegūst to redzamo.
You just read Exodus 6:6-7.
Tad mums ir jāizlasa otrā Mozus 6. Nodaļa.
And let's do it.
Izdarīsim to.
Exodus 6:6-7.
Otrā Mozus 6 no 6 līdz 6. articles.
Yes, verse 6:6 to chapter 6, verse 6 and 7. Therefore say to the Israelites, I am the Lord, and I'll bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians.
Tad 2. Mozes 6:6. Tāpēc saka Izraēla bērniem, es esmu tas kungs un izvedīšu jūs no Ēģiptes jūga.
I will free you from the slave of being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm, and I will with mighty acts and judgments.
Izglābšu jūs no vergošanas un atpestīšu jūs ar izstieptu roku un ar lielām tiesām.
I will take you as my people, and I'll be your God.
Un es ņemšu jūs sev par tautu un būšu jums par Dievu.
So, even the Egypt story here is being seen in the context of what God intends to do with these people.
Tad arī šis skats, jeb aina Ēģiptē, ir tas, kas atklāja, ko Dievs vēlās darīt ar savu tautu.
And I believe that here in chapter... Well, maybe I'll find it, but leave it for the time being.
Tad nu tur vēlāk.
Maybe I have it here, Exodus 12. Let's see what Exodus 12 says.
Tad pastīsimies, ko 2. Mozes 12. Nodaļa saka.
I think it is 40 to 42.
Tad 40.
Now this is connecting to the Abraham promise. It's just to let you show you the connection.
Es tikai gribu parādīt šo kontaktu.
How these people are thinking. Now the length of the time the Israelites people lived in Egypt was 430 years.
Tā, 2. Mozes 12 un 40. Izraēla bērnu uzturēšanās laiks Ēģiptē bija 430 gadi.
At the end of the 430 years, to the very day, all the Lord's division left Egypt.
Un pēc 430 gadiem vienā dienā viss tā kunga pulka izgāja no Ēģiptes zemes.
You remember who promised those 430 years?
Vai jūs atceraties, kurš apsolīja šos 430 gadus?
In Genesis chapter 15, I believe it is. This is where actually God said this is what's going to happen.
Ja tas bija pirmā Mozes grāmatā, kur tas tika jau pateikts, apsolīts.
I just want to highlight this. They are very much aware who they are.
Tad es gribēju tik uzsvērt, kad viņiem ļoti skaidrs, kas viņi ir.
They are the agent in God's single plan for the restoration of the world.
Viņi ir kā šie aģenti šajā Dieva plānā, atjaunošanas plānā.
So this is actually what is going to be reconfirmed and re-emphasized at Sinai when we come to that event.
Tas tiks atkal pastiprināts un
is another transitional place in the story.
Ja, apstiprināts, atjaunots tur Sinai.
It's a covenant making event.
Tas ir šīs te līguma slēgšanas.
And that's where we come to Exodus 19.
Kad mēs nonākam pie 2. Mozes 19. Nodaļas.
Verse 3-6.
No 3 līdz 6.
And then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called on him from the mountain and said.
Bet Mozes uzkāpa kalnā pie Dieva, un tas kungs viņam sauc no kalna un sacī.
This is what you have to say to the house of Jacob, what you are to tell the people of Israel.
Tā saka Jēkaba namam un pasludina Izraēla bērniem.
You yourself have seen what I did to Edom, how I carried you on eagle's wing and brought you to myself.
Jūs esat redzējuši, ko es esmu darījis Ēģiptiešiem un kā es jūs esmu nesis uz ērgļa spārniem. Okay.
Now, if you obey and fully keep my covenant, then out of the nations you will be my treasured possession.
Bet tagad, ja jūs uzklausīsit manu balsu un turēsit manu derību, tad jūs man būsit par īpašumu visu tautu vidu.
Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom, a priest and a holy nation. These are the words the Lord spoke to the Israelite.
Jo man pieder visa pasaule, un jūs būsit man par priesteri un ķēniņu valsti, par svētu tautu.
And if you read on this story there, you will remember that Israelites responded positively, and yes, we will thank you for the offer.
Un ja jūs lasīsiet tālāk, jūs atcerieties, ka tur Izraela tauta atbildēja pozitīvi, teica jā, paldies par priekšlikumu.
The next step you read about in chapter 19 from 9 to 11 is
nu, un tad tālāk, nākošais solis, ko jūs lasat.
The actual event where the agreement between God and Israel is established.
Kā šis noruna jeb līgums starp Dievu un tautu ir noslēgts.
And then In chapter 20, verse 1 to 20, you get the covenant law pronounced.
Un tad tur 20. Nodaļā no viens sākot, tur ir šis līguma, šie likums.
And now God spoke directly to them, what we call the Ten Commandments.
Un tad Dievs runā tieši uz tautu, tas ir tas, ko mēs saucam par 10 baušļiem.
And then they asked Moses and said, you go and talk with the Lord, we can't stand this speaking.
Un tad tauta teica, tu ej runā ar Dievu, jo mēs nevaram panest to runāšanu.
Then he comes back in chapter 24 with more detailed instructions about how they should run their civil order and society.
Un tad tur Mozes atgriežas 24. Nodaļā un tālāk ar to, kā viss šī kārtība, civillikums, kā tas darbojas.
And then in Exodus 24 verse 4 or 7 to 8, they actually confirm the covenant.
Un tad tur jau 24. Nodaļa 4. Pants un tālāk, tad tur viņi apstiprina šo
līgumu. So when we speak about the Sinai covenant, this is what we are talking about.
Ja, un tad, kad mēs runājam par šo Sinai derību, ja, jā, līgumu, tad
in
tas,
other words,
par ko mēs
runājam. By this act, Israel is constituted as a nation under God.
Tātad šeit Izraels ir kā Dieva tauta tagad.
With a unique position in the world.
Ar tādu īpašu, nu jā, stāvokli pasaulē.
With a basic constitution which is called the law or the Torah or the book of the covenant, more correctly, the book of the covenant.
Tātad pamata šo konstitūciju, kas precīzāk būtu saukums par...
Which is not identical to what we call the five books of Moses.
Šo Toru, jeb bauslības grāmatu, kas nav identisks tam, ko mēs...
This is included in these books, but not identical with it.
Jā, kas nav gluži tā, kā tās piecas Mozes grāmatas, kas tur ir iekļauts, bet nav identisks.
And what they accept is to be a nation under God.
Un tas, ko viņi pieņem, ir būt par Dieva tautu.
They will receive a unique status.
Viņiem ir īpašs status.
And they will have a unique role and mission in the world.
Un viņiem ir īpašs uzdevums misija šai pasaulē.
In other words, they confirm that they are the people of God, the people of promise given to Abraham.
Un tātad viņi apstiprina, kad jā, viņi ir šie īpašie cilvēki, īpašā tauta apsolījumam, kas tik dots Abrahamam.
In other words, they buy straight into the promise to Abraham about being God's agent.
Un tad viņi piekrīt šim apsolījumu piepildījumam būt par šiem aģentiem.
This is not about a way of salvation we are talking here.
Mēs šeit nerunājam par glābšanas veidu.
It's not about how you get forgiveness or how you're right with God.
Te neiet runa par to, kā jūs saņemt piedošanu vai kā būt pareizi.
Or how you will receive forgiveness for sins or anything like that.
Tad neiet runa par to, kā jūs saņemsiet grēku piedošanu, nekā līdzīgu.
It is acceptance of being the agent.
Tas ir piekrišana būt par aģentu.
That was promised to Abraham.
Kas tika apsolīts jau Abrahamam.
Now how sinners come to God and can live with God, including the Israelites?
Tad kā grēcinieki var nākt pie Dieva un dzīvot ar Dievu,
is an issue that will be addressed later on or subsequently.
Tas būs tas jautājums, kas tiks apskatīts vēlāk.
How to live with God when you yourself are sinful?
Kā sadzīvot ar Dievu, kad jūs paši esat grēcīgi?
It was attached to the covenant.
Tas tiek pievienots šim līgumam.
That is instruction regarding their religious life, the tabernacle and all of that.
Tas tad jau ir jau kā pielikums tur.
They are, yes, how to live with him.
Jā, nu kā ar viņu sadzīvot?
Now, they are now the people of God, and God now wants to dwell among them.
Viņi ir Dieva tauta, un Dievs tagad grib pie viņiem dzīvot.
How that can be and how that will work, he will now give them instruction about.
Kā tas var notikt, Dievs tagad dos viņiem instrukcijas.
What I'm trying to say here is that Israel was a nation.
Tad tas, ko es gribu teikt, ir, kad Izraels ir nācija.
Or a community of faith.
Vai tāda sabiedrība.
That is structured around the sanctuary, the temple.
Kas ir ap šo svētnici, jeb templi.
With a supportive civil arrangement.
Ar atbalstošu visu šo civilo iekārtu.
How sin is dealt with and how you can really live with that holy God is explained in that arrangement.
Un tad, kā sadzīvot ar grēku un kā tas viss funkcionē, atbrīvoties, tas ir šajā kārtībā iekļauts.
And we know the effect of that very quickly when they rebelled and they had the golden calf event.
Un to jau mēs redzam uzreiz, kā tas darbojās ļoti ātri, kad tur bija sacelšanās zelta teļš.
You have a response of judgment and you have a response of mercy.
Un tad jūs jau redzat uzreiz šo tiesas atbildi kā tiesu un atbildi kā žēlastību.
And it's one more time being reinforced how can sinners receive forgiveness.
Un tas tiek vēlreiz tur atkārtots, kā grēcinieki var saņemt piedošanu.
And that you find in the book of Leviticus.
Un to jūs atrodat tālāk jau trešā Mozes grāmatā.
By this the blood thou shalt provide forgiveness and reconciliation for sins.
Tad asinīm jābūt izlietām grēku piedošanai.
So Israel ended up with a very clear theology of forgiveness and reconciliation.
Tad Izraēlam bija ļoti skaidra šī teoloģija par piedošanu un atjaunošanu.
When you approach God in the prescribed way, you can obtain this gift.
Tad, kad tu tuvojies Dievam šajā ļoti skaidri noteiktajā veidā, tad tu var saņemt to dāvanu.
How could they obtain it by the way of the sanctuary?
Tad tas iegūt to varēja caur svētnīcas apmeklēšanu.
And I want to just make the point that they receive this detailed instruction after their great rebellion about the golden calf.
Tad es gribēju uzsvērt, ka tas tiek saņemts skaidrojums pēc šīs sacelšanās, kur tas zelta teļš.
It's very obvious from the story that the giving of the Ten Commandments and other civil law did not have the function of solving their sin problem.
Gribu skaidri norādīt, ka baušļu došana, šis līgums, tas nav, kas atrisina grēka problēmu.
It was the violation of this standard that made the sanctuary way necessary.
Tas bija, lūk, šī likuma pārkāpšana, kas izsauca to, kad šī svētnīca bija nepieciešama.
It was their slide into idolatry that made this remedy necessary.
Tātad, saslimšana ir tas, kas izsauc to, ka vajag zāles.
So what is the purpose of the Ten Commandments?
Tātad, kāds ir baušu, kādi baušļi nozīme?
Why did God give them?
Kāpēc to Dievs dod?
What is he trying to say to them?
Ko viņš ar to viņiem grib teikt?
What kind of problem do they address?
Tātad, kādu problēmu tas risina?
After the break.
Tas pēc pārtraukuma.
After the break.
Okay.
Yes.
10 minutes?
10 minutes,
jā,
yes.
Centīsimies 10 minūtes.
Yes.